The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening. And for the last 6 or so weeks, I've been giving a series of talks on the five hindrances. So, for those of you who haven't been here, the five hindrances are five hindering movements or activities of the mind. So so they hinder our ability to see clearly when these are operating. So desire is one of them, caught up in sensual desire, the pursuit of pleasure, can hinder our ability to see what's for our best interest or interest for others. Ill will can be blinding to us. Lethargy, torpor can be blinding. Restlessness, anxiety also. And doubt, and when it can be very hindering to people. So it stands in the way of our ability to see clearly when these things are operating strongly. They also obscure our wisdom, our wise understanding of things. And for meditators, they interfere with our ability to get concentrated. Because to get concentrated, we have to stop the monkey mind that goes off in this way and that way, and let the intentionality of the mind, the focus of the mind, the direction of the mind, kind of be focused where we want it, as opposed to being pulled left and right by our concerns. So these five hindrances are five concerns of the mind that can, five preoccupations that can take over. And anybody who practices mindfulness or meditation needs to one way or the other contend with these five hindrances. They have to learn about them, become wise about them, and learn how to overcome their hindering quality, the hindering effect. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to get rid of all doubt and ill will and so forth, but we have to at least overcome their hindering quality or the way in which they keep the mind moving and agitated and scattered and fragmented and preoccupied. So it's a very important process of practice, and I think almost anybody who learns meditation practice, any kind of meditation practice, maybe spiritual practice, has in some way to contend with these kind of forces. And once these forces have abated and gotten quiet, then there's a variety of different ways you can go in meditation to go further and deeper or kind of interesting directions. So I mean, this is what I've been talking about over these last weeks. And today is meant to be perhaps the last evening on this series. And for those who have been coming, you're now somewhat familiar with these. And if you haven't been coming regularly, but you're a bit of a meditator, hopefully you're familiar with these well enough. And I thought we would do something a little different this evening. And see if we can get you guys to talk about the hindrances and to kind of let them kind of, I don't know if come alive is the best expression, but kind of understand them.
Unleash them.
try to kind of understand them from a more from the inside, from each of you, about your own experiences with them. And so a couple of things more to say. One is it's useful to think that regard the hindrances as impersonal forces. That these five things, sensual desire, craving, and ill will, and so forth, that these are things that just come with being a human. And so there's no need to feel personally kind of identified with them, or personally, use it to judge yourself personally. It's like a poor me, or a terrible me, or great me, I'm really good at this ill will thing. It's just the impersonal forces that we have to contend with, but we free ourselves up from kind of labeling ourselves or identifying ourselves by them. So that makes it a lot easier to work with them. And the other thing, and the kind of take I want to do this evening, is the thesis that different people, each person, at least I say this way, that some people have more of one kind of hindrance than others. So, like, there are some people who maybe they're born, the way they're wired, or who knows why. Their tendency is to fall into the hindrance of sensual desire, pursuing sensual pleasure, and to a degree there's a problem for their lives. Other people tend to pursue, or their mind falls into ill will, aversion. Others sloth and torpor, others restlessness and anxiety, and others into doubt. So, for example, a person who has kind of sensual desire as a driving force in their mind, they come in here, maybe the first time they come to IMC, they come into the meditation hall, and their first strategy is to look around to see where's the most comfortable place to sit, where's the nicest place to sit, and that's what they're focused on. Someone else comes here first time, and if ill will is their suit, they first look around and see where they're not going to sit. They see all the things that are wrong and the places, you know, I'm not that person, not over there, and this is not quite right. And so there's more like, you know, it's kind of resistance or aversion. The sloth and torpor person comes in and looks around and just gets tired. You know, kind of begins to shut down. And the restless anxiety person, maybe fear, anxiety, or restlessness, comes in, operates. They come in here, and they just don't even know which place to sit. Should I be over here? Should I be over there? Sit down one place. Maybe over there is better. They go over there. And or they just kind of anxious that they've sat in the wrong place. Or maybe they shouldn't even be here. Or just anxiety is just kind of in the forefront. And the doubt person comes in and doesn't know that they should be here. Should I be here? Should I be somewhere else? What am I supposed to do here? I don't know if I can do this. This looks difficult. All these people are sitting so still. I don't know if I can do that. After all, I don't know about this Buddhism stuff. They talk a lot about this no-self stuff. It doesn't make any sense. So I don't know if I can buy into this. You know, something like that. So doubt. So the premise then is different people have, you know, is it kind of, you know, one of these five hindrances might be stronger for some of you. So some months ago, we had a kind of a day-long practice day here around the five hindrances. And what we did was people self-identified themselves by the hindrances. They chose one that was kind of like their strong suit, that they most kind of identified with, or what tend to operate the most when they meditate or something. And then we formed groups, small discussion groups, where one representative of each of the hindrance was there in the group. And then they went around and people talked about what their experience of meditation was like for them because of that hindrance. And for some of the people in those discussion groups, it was eye-opening. They had no idea that other people's experience of meditation could be so radically different from their own because, you know, they have a different kind of hindrance that tends to operate more often. So I was going to see if we could pull that off. We don't have to do little groups here in discussion groups, but I was wondering if we could have some of you take the mic and answer some questions around these hindrances, and then we can see if we can tease apart some of the differences of people having meditation based on how these hindrances operate for them. So are you game for that? You have aversion. Yeah. Some of you just can't wait. This is going to be fun. Some of you are ready for the door. Some of you are falling asleep. So good. So the first question is, before you meditate, you're at home and you think, oh, it's time to meditate, or I should meditate, or the meditation is a good idea. How does this these hindrances operate? How do they hinder, interfere with your intention to sit down and meditate? So for those of you who it tends to be, more often than not, that desire is your strong suit, what tends to operate. We're not going to identify you as being a desire type. Just, you know, that is one that's most familiar with you, the one that rears up most. How does that come into play? Or how does each of these hindrances come into play for different types? In following through, how does it interfere with following through on the intention to meditate? Make sense, the question? So can we have a representative of the desire type?
Just kind of reflecting on the morning that I have, I realize, wow, I have to have a cup of coffee before I run, before I stretch and do yoga. Then I do stretch and yoga, then I do Tai Chi, then I have my breakfast, and then I'm ready for a set. So all those things I kind of convince myself are things that are really good for me and that prepare my body for a sit. Mm. But
So underneath all that is really the pursuit of pleasure.
Some sort of pleasure. Satisfaction or pleasure.
And you have you've built up a beautiful philosophy about how this is really healthy and necessary.
Before my run, I need my coffee, right? So, yeah.
Great, thank you. So someone from the hindrance school. Not the hindrance, the aversion, the ill will aversion. Someone like to say something about that? We'll have to call on you, Richard. No, it's not you. So well, the aversion people don't have a problem with meditating. Yes?
I do not.
Yeah, it's not for your, it's not for the people.
It's the recording.
Uh-oh. And it's also for people who have hearing assistant devices. People have.
I think the aversion, when it shows up for me, is I'm involved in something major right now over the last couple of years, and I just get so angry I can't sit.
Mm.
It's just that, yeah, if I sit and I start to close my eyes, my mind just races and screams. I'm going, this is doing less good than if I just got up and took a long, fast walk or did exercises or went working on my sailboat and found something else to do that required some physical energy.
Right. So aversion or anger takes over so strongly that it's counterproductive, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So someone else. For the aversion approach. How does ill will or aversion interfere with your intention to meditate?
Is that you? I know you can't see me, but I know you can hear me. It has to do with procrastinating. And so I can find all the reasons to not sit. And what I find is that there's a part of me that doesn't want to go to the silence. Because some of the fear of what it may bring me or show me or tell me.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else for aversion?
It's too cold. The bed feels really warm. It's too early.
And that's the beginning of the list. Is that the beginning of the list?
It's the beginning of the list.
Okay. So how about what's called sloth and torpor?
I'm much too tired to sit in the morning. I just can't keep my eyes open. And the only way I can get going is to just get up and get in action. Mm-hmm. So, and then I work so hard that I'm too tired, you know, to just sit down and meditate.
So in the morning it doesn't work, and later in the day it doesn't work.
I'm too tired from all my actions.
So fatigue or tired is there, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. Someone else? Lethargy, tiredness, fatigue, sloth, torpor.
Perhaps this is related, but it's so easy to just sit quietly and kind of daydream, and so hard to do the work, and that it really is to constantly focus on the breath and stop letting your thoughts just trip around.
Great.
That's another mm-hmm. form of torpor, like, oh, this yeah. is nice, just sitting here.
So when there's sloth and torpor, there's not really any energy to apply oneself in the practice, and so the mind can just drift off. And
yeah.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Any more? So what about restlessness and anxiety? Okay, give me that.
Yeah, so in the morning I think, okay, I should meditate now. Oh, well, let's see. I do feel a little bit tired, so maybe I should get a little decaf coffee first, and then I'll meditate, and then I start getting my stuff together, and well, actually, I have to make my lunch, so maybe I should do that, and then I should meditate, and then that way, if I don't run out of time, then I'll have my, or if I run out of time, I have my lunch packed. Okay, that's good, and then I start to sit. Well, actually, maybe I should sit this evening, and it goes on like this, and then if I actually do sit, I start to say, you know, in my mind, some anxious thing, and then I start getting hot, and, you know, oh, I shouldn't have had that coffee, and now I'm really hot, and then things will go through my mind about scenarios, and it just, yeah, I thought it was an aversion type, but I can see that this is my specialty.
Great. You know, up here in the front here, Cheryl, Andrea.
Yeah, so definitely the worry is my specialty, and one thing that I discovered is that I thought for a while that, you know, if only this wasn't here, then I wouldn't worry. But from sitting, I've discovered that it's actually there is an endless amount of, there's always something to worry about. So it's more, so I started to look, so if there's always something to worry about, what can be done about it? And I noticed that the more my mind is restless, the more, of course, I will worry. So if I can just stop a little bit, even if it's just a tiny bit, to identify worry, then I have a chance to break it. So for me, it's not so much that I don't get to sit. I have gotten to the point where, yes, I know if I sit, something will happen. I mean, it'll help. So I do sit, but can I get myself to the point of stopping the worrying and getting in a pause in mm-hmm. between?
Great, thank you. So here, another one.
Yes, I find that there's just so many things that I want to accomplish and so many things I want to do, so many books to read, so many places to go, so many things to do, just to sit and not do anything, you know, seems to be sometimes not accomplishing anything. So I have this sense that you know, everything is before me, and I'll be looking into doing something or a project that I need to do or some event that I need to go to. And wow, why put that off to just sit?
And next to you here.
I'm actually an aversion type. That's my specialty. But I've noticed lately the way that it's been manifesting is by keeping me up at night with restlessness and anxiety, so that I wake up later and then have sloth and torpor in the morning. So that I have less time to meditate and my morning practice. Because I don't want to face some of the things. Mostly it's about fear. And so I find that the hindrances will use each other to make it harder, that they work together and play off of each other so that it becomes harder to... I make it to the seat, but sometimes it's not a whole lot of time and sometimes it's very challenging as a result.
The multiple hindrance attacks.
Very coordinated.
So... now the rest of you can talk about doubt. So we have someone represent doubt. How does doubt get in the way of meditating?
I have been doing this for so long, and I have been doing it so badly for so long. that I say to myself, why am I even sitting here? My mind is going nuts, and some people are just born meditators, and I'm not one of them. And I just can't do it. It's just too hard. And it does interfere. I try to sit anyway, but my mind is very flighty, and I do think that maybe, I personally have no doubt in the teachings. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here, right? But for myself, I think maybe I can't do this. Maybe this is too, for me personally, it's too hard. And that does interfere with this.
Mm-hmm. So doubt about your own capacity. So other doubt? Anne?
No, this is
I think mine is... I want to meditate right. I want to do it right. And I have a lot of body stuff, so I need to get into the right posture so I won't be in pain. And I never can quite find the right posture, and I end up getting very tense. And that, of course, makes all the body stuff worse. And then that kicks off all the restlessness that if I thought about it, I could figure out the right way to do it.
And the idea of being right feeds into doubt. There's doubt. This must be not right.
Whatever I'm doing right now must not be the right thing. So it's, what is the right thing? There must be out there, and I don't know what it is.
If you just move around, fidget enough, you'll get to the right.
You'll get to it, right, yeah.
But you wouldn't know how this... That, you wouldn't know what it looked like once you
Right,
started.
I wouldn't recognize it when I got to it. Never mind.
So one more here, another doubter, maybe.
I was just going to say, I think I'm equally skilled at all the hindrances, and I was wondering if that means I'm well-rounded.
So you've managed to overcome the hindrances to sitting, to getting down to sit, and then you're meditating. So you're sitting there meditating, minding your own business. Things are going along fine. And then at some point, sooner or later, you notice that it's hard to be focused, or it's difficult to be present. The mind's wandering away a lot, the body gets uncomfortable, strong emotions might come up, something that becomes difficult for you. So when something difficult happens in meditation, how does each of these hindrances kick in a different way? So for the people who have desires, sensual desire is a strong fort, how does that come into play when you're being challenged in meditation?
find myself efforting a lot. I sort of grasp at something I've experienced in the past that I might want to experience again. So I work harder at it.
To get something, if desire for this great
and
thing.
And it's futile once that starts going.
Okay, thank you.
For me, it's really different things on different days. A lot of days, it's the torpor stuff. I find myself just falling asleep over and over again and trying to wake myself up, and then other times, it's that restlessness. I sit down, and maybe I have a lot of mental energy going on, and just all of a sudden, I wanted to call that person. Can't forget to get that at the store. So I get up and make myself a note, and I sit down, and I remember something else. And a lot of time it's just sort of back pain. It's that thing about that, you know, finding the right place to sit. Oh, this doesn't feel right. And I think because of all these different hindrances, which is usually the hindrances are the things that I'm experiencing in the meditation, that maybe it's the doubt that keeps me from going there, because it's like, okay, was it going to be falling asleep or back pain or this, you know, getting up and making lists of things?
I've been doing this for only about 2 months, I think. And I think sometimes the desire is actually the motivational part, because every once in a while there's this feeling of a epiphany or just kind of bliss where I feel like I'm at this place where all those things that were bothering me are gone. And so, but sometimes I wonder if maybe I'm latching onto that at times too.
Okay.
But it feels good.
when something makes it hard for you to meditate, when you are meditating and there's some challenge in it, like your body hurts or if you're strong preoccupation about something, so you find it's hard to be present, mind wanders away a lot. So how does the hindrances kick in? How do they respond? How do they get activated by something challenging? Yes.
Again, going back to aversion, sometimes if I feel like I'm close to something where it's going to be a reminder of something painful or just something that I'm afraid about, I have noticed a pattern where, not so much now, but it used to be that my mind would create a problem that I would then have to deal with, so that I wouldn't actually have to look at whatever it was that I was being averse to.
A distraction.
It would, yeah. And in fact, you know, and sometimes it was petty, but sometimes it appeared quite serious, and it would create an internal problem that then I would have to deal with, so that I wouldn't have to face the whatever it was.
And the problem was something that you were kind of aversive towards. Also.
Oh yes, it was. Yeah, it was something that was problematic enough that I would have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And not could just let it go.
Mm-hmm. So good. Great, thank you. And then, so what's the corollary for desire types?
I think fantasy. I mean, just getting lost in some kind of really juicy story, you know, some future conversation with somebody that you're, you know, whatever you're macking on or what, it doesn't matter. You know, it's just like something to get lost in, you know, that feels good and is kind of much more pleasant than the knee pain or whatever's actually occurring right this moment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, good. And the sloth and torpor people, or?
This happens when I'm here, I think because it's after dinner, and I love coming, and I feel safe here because there's no phone and distractions. So I sit down to do one thing at the beginning, which is just to follow the breath. And, of course, every time that gets a little boring, I think the sloth and torpor kicks in. It's just an escape, and it's very easy this time of day to have that happen. And I almost fell over once tonight. So, you know, when that happens, then you tend to wake up, and then I start over again with the breathing.
So sloth and torpor is partly a strategy of avoiding the boredom?
I suppose. I don't even know if it's boredom because it kicks in before I even know it.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else have the experience of sloth and torpor setting in as a reaction to something difficult happening in meditation?
I don't know if this is quite it, but sometimes I might feel, okay, now I'm focusing on the breath. Good, I got it. So then I can focus on the breath, and at the same time I can think about everything else. Yeah. Right? Okay, I got it type thing. I don't know if that's something that might happen to me. And then, of course, a few seconds later, you realize, well, you just lost it because of that notion.
I see. So you're trying to be multitasking.
Efficient. I'm doing that. I can focus on my breath and also
take care of everything else. So another person. How about doubt? Just sitting, meditating, something challenging happens.
I don't know, would you call, like, resignation doubt? It's kind of like a form of doubt, like, where you're like, oh, God, this, no way this is ever going to get solved. Or, you know, like, if it's a tension in the body, it's like you're present for it for a little while, and then it's, like, not going away, and it's, you know, you don't understand it, and, you know, you don't have no idea what's going on, and, like, then you just kind of float off somewhere. It's kind of, I feel like, yeah, there's just all these things you're bouncing off of, and you might, you know, you don't, like, you kind of lose the will to engage them sometimes.
So I think maybe it could be doubt. It could also be kind of giving up that produces sloth and torpor, tiredness. Just kind of give up, kind of just go to sleep. And okay, thank you. I saw someone here on the steps.
So my experience with doubt is I doubt everything that I did that day. It's like, did I say the right thing to my daughter? Was that the right way to solve that problem? Did I really help my client, you know, in whatever they were dealing with today? And it goes on. And then you try to come back to the breath, and that quickly gets lost to another thing that you think that you maybe didn't handle quite right.
That breath, I didn't quite do that breath right.
Exactly. But I think, for me, it seems to be this experience of both doubt and I think some combination of, like, restlessness and anxiety without the mind calming down.
Mm-hmm.
Guilt,
I guess, would fit in. Best place to put guilt probably is in the worry, regret, restlessness camp.
Before 9 o'clock is over, I hope you're going to tell us what of the five hindrances you identify with when you started meditating, and also now that you're a seasoned meditator, that what hinders your meditation, and what comes to you of the five hindrances. I'm very curious. Thank you.
I think that I most identify with desire. Desire is really easy for me. I can, you know, they're a dime a dozen. So, you know, I can be sitting there meditating, and sometimes I think, oh, it'd really be nice to have a nice, you know, some nice joy now. So then I find myself going off trying to, you know, pursuing the joy as opposed to just letting it arise on its own. Or I can sit there and start thinking about wonderful projects. You know, I like to do that. I like to do this. And the mind goes off there sometimes. So desire is probably my most common one. But I'm familiar with all of them. A seasoned meditator, huh? So a seasoned meditator is someone who is familiar with all of them. The new meditator is still to learn. And so the idea is to become familiar with them. And that was part of the theme over these last few weeks when I gave the talk. The talks is to become familiar. We don't want to dismiss them too quickly. We want to learn to recognize them, understand how they operate for us, understand the different characteristics of them. And because freedom comes from familiarity. If you understand something really well, it's easier not to buy into it. It's easier not to be swept away by it. It's easier to be free of it. So it's really important when you do this mindfulness practice to not be aversive to these hindrances, not to push them away, but when they appear, to take some time to actually investigate them, look at them more carefully, study them, get to know what they are. And hopefully when you have that familiarity, then you'll recognize them quicker when they occur. And when you recognize them quicker, there's also, when you're also familiar with them, you'll also be more willing to step out of their orbit, more willing not to believe them, more willing not to kind of be pulled along into their world of desire, ill will, and all that. If you're not so familiar with them, each of these hindrances can come with very strong almost like sometimes like belief sometimes that this is important, this is necessary, this is where I'm supposed to be. And so it takes some doing to step out of that flow, that momentum that's there. And so what we're trying to do with mindfulness is to step out of our preoccupations so we can be present and aware and free of them as opposed to being pulled along by them. So as we have these last 5 minutes, I wonder if representatives of each type could offer maybe one thing, one choice strategy that they discover that really helps them to work with their hindrance. Something that's kind of particular to that hindrance. Don't just say, oh, I've learned that mindfulness is really good. That's good, but that's true for all of them. But something that's particular to your hindrance. So if someone has learned something about how to work with desire that has really helped them so their desire doesn't get the upper hand so often. And then the other ones, so their hindrances.
Yeah, I kind of use the desire as a tool as far as I think that, you know, I'm stuck on something, and I said, well, if I meditate, then it, you know, the idea will come to me, and you know that I can, you know, use the meditation as something that will get me through the desire that I have, that I'll calm myself down and all of a sudden there'll be a breakthrough, and I look forward to meditating because maybe the breakthrough will be there.
Great, thank you. Behind you there's the chair.
Well, I guess my main hindrance at times is doubt, and I guess it's doubt about how the benefit of meditation and how can it help me transition then to the real world, that I can sit and feel clarity and joy and all the other good stuff, and then I might get up and find I'm actually in kind of a cranky mood. So how are the teachings, you know, preparing me for the real world? Well, sitting is the real world. I understand that, but it's the active world, I guess, the action world. It's the relationship world, and so two things that help is doing walking meditation after the sitting, so that you know I'm in action in the world. And that helps me make the bridge that I'm looking for the teachings to help me with. Mm. And the other thing is if I can get in touch with loving kindness, not force it, but see if I, you know, if I'm graced enough during the meditation, it might arise for me. And that is probably the most surefire sort of bridge to the world of that's waiting outside of sitting meditation.
Thank you.
heard something in one of the talks. You probably said it, but it works for me, and it works with this. Did I do that right? Did I do that right? And I just tell myself, you don't have to think about that. This is vacation time. You don't have to think about that now. This is time when you don't have to think about such things.
Great, thank you.
And for aversion, the one thing that I found that, I mean, there's lots of things, but the one that I keep coming back to most often is probably compassion. That, especially for things like fear and things of where you really are afraid to look at something, compassion really is the one thing that now spontaneously arises, where before I kind of had to reach for it. But it's the one thing to that makes not necessarily everything okay, but makes it a lot easier to deal with.
Great, thank you. Go ahead. Yeah. We'll do two more. One here and one over there.
I feel like sloth and torpor are my friend in a way, because I have so many strategies that I've developed to cope with them. I sit up very, very straight. I keep my hands up so that they're not resting in my lap. I keep my eyes open. Sometimes I'm looking up so that there's a lot of energy that comes into my eyes. And then I feel like I am fiercely vigilant in order to stay awake. And I have to practice fierce vigilance the whole time. And the middle of my back also is very painful. So then I'll go from fierce vigilance to when it gets too painful, I'll just start relaxing my back, but then I'll fall asleep. I'll start getting sleepy, so fierce vigilance. So I'm making these constant little minor adjustments between fierce vigilance and relaxation.
Great, beautiful. Thank you. So the last one back in the corner.
Going back to compassion, that is my antidote for anxiety. I'm an expert at worrying, what do they think of me? Did I say the wrong thing? How can I craft that email so that she really understands that this is what I really meant and she'll like me again? I have what I call my pathological need for approval. And so when that comes up in meditation or in daily life, I find that compassion is for myself, because it's so easy to judge that and say, I should be beyond that, this is foolish, this is stupid, everyone else can make through their lives without thinking about this, why can't I? And then I just go back to compassion.
Great, beautiful. So thank you all, everyone for sharing, and I think it's wonderful to hear the inside, what goes on behind the curtains. And I know that some people say that they come to sit in a group of people, and everyone else seems to be sitting on the verge of Buddhahood, except for themselves. They're sitting so still, but now you find out a little bit what goes on behind, in the back room. And so this is the stuff we're working with, and all these hindrances are workable. They don't have to be limiting. They don't have to be hindering. It's possible to engage them in a variety of ways, and to overcome their hindering quality. And I hope that in these weeks that we've been doing the hindrances, that both you're more familiar with them, but also you're more encouraged and perhaps more confident that there is a way to practice with them and work with them and to overcome their hindering quality. And that confidence supports you in doing so. So may you someday become hindrance-free. Thank you.